Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Forever!
Everyone, I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race Season 6, a published author, and a star of two films that were released. And you know what? People did watch them. Give it up for the bitch who came after me, Bianca Del Rio. Hello, Yonkers.
Hello, how are you? What a lovely introduction.
I always try to match the introduction to the person I'm introducing.
Well, It seems very fitting. And I think we could start out by saying, the bitch after you, I enjoy because we, as we know now with our 52nd season of Drag Race, the best seasons were 4, 5, and 6.
It really was it was the trifecta.
Without a doubt.
I always like kind of brag about the fact that like, yeah, you know, Bianca, the queen who, the winner of the winners, I did hand her the, the scepter, you know?
Yes, you did hand me the scepter, yes. And it was, I mean, it's weird because I don't know for you, I was never a huge fan of the show. Like I wasn't crazy about it, but I'm really bad with new things on television. For instance, everybody loved Glee. I hated it because everybody loved it. I never watched an episode, but I just hated it because they loved it. So Drag Race really wasn't on my radar in the beginning, and it wasn't until I saw a marathon that Logo was airing where they did 4 and 5. And I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of fabulous. And there was two great stories. You and Sharon had amazing stories, completely different, talented, fun individuals. And I thought, oh, why not? Why not try this?
I'm sitting here thinking like, Bianca Del Rio, a contrarian? Who knew? I mean, I have a similar, I was already working as a professional drag queen when it started airing. Mm-hmm. And all my friends were getting really into it. And I was like, the last thing I want to do when I get home from my bar gig is watch more drag queens on TV. But season 2, when I saw Pandora do Carol Channing, I was like, oh, there's room for us grand dames, you know, us I think, well, antiquated beauties.
Well, when I went back and then I even, because, you know, living in New York at the time, I saw many of my untalented friends get a bite of the world, like Manila, who's completely useless. And here she was on TV. And I was like, well, if this stupid cunt can do it, I can. So that was that. I mean, think about it. Manila and Jiggly. These were the options from New York before I came
so
along.
Hateful.
No, I love them, but they're rotted. Let's be honest. They'll tell you they're rotted. They know they're rotted. So that was our New York representation prior to that. So it was just this moment of like, oh, well, why not try? And I was 37. So I thought, you know, I could wrap up drag at 40, as you were saying, you know, doing the bar gigs and schlepping in New York. I thought, that's enough. I could wrap it up at 40 and be happy, you know? Mm-hmm. And look what happened. It's crazy.
You know, you are of the ilk. You are very good friends with many of the legends who made it as big as drag queens could make it before there was a TV show dedicated to drag. How do you find, do you feel supported by your sisters from the old guard of drag?
Well, I think the world is so different now with social media, as you mm-hmm. know, and a lot of people can become famous. Look, we know who Kim Kardashian is from getting fucked on a videotape. You know, we can say she has no talent, but we can also not deny her popularity or her money. I mean, obviously, someone likes her and someone gets it. But I like to remind the new crowd about the old girls, because there mm-hmm. is something pretty amazing about a Lady Bunny, a Jackie Beat, a Coco Peru, a Varla Jean Merman, that, you know, Sherry Vine, that had worked all these years, and they're still working now, yeah. you know? And I wish that drag queens understood what they're doing as far as they find their niche, whatever it may be, their characters, and they stick to it, you know? Mm-hmm. There's a show there. They all do successful one-woman shows, and they're entertaining. They're not just pretty in a picture. Well, let's face it, none of them are pretty in a picture. But in the end, you're like, oh, this is, to me, that's what drag was. And it's yeah. not to say what's happening now is not drag, but I mean, there was substance to it. So I cater to that. I run to that. I go see the show. Dina Martina, I mean, all of them. It's just, there's something about each one, and they're all friends, you mm-hmm. know? And mm-hmm. and that I respect, much respect for those girls.
Do you find that drag is heading in a good direction? Do you see this as a mark of progress, that we're getting to see all these different types of drag being represented that aren't necessarily as performance-based as the old guard of drag? What are your thoughts on that?
I think you know, it's good and bad with all of it. It's amazing mm. that it's in people's living rooms. It's amazing that there's 900,000 opportunities for drag queens on television. But there's also the bad, the social media. Everybody's got an opinion. You're constantly compared to someone else. Mm-hmm. Or when someone will say, you know, if Sherry Vine does a video and they go, oh my God, that's so Alaska. It's like, that's the last thing you want to hear when you've done drag for 25 years is be compared to some little dirty Q-tip named Alaska. It's like, girl, but they don't know. People just don't know. So I think it's great that there's exposure, but I think there's a lot of shit with it too, you know?
I think that's just the double-edged sword yeah. of where we are at with entertainment right now, that there can be reality TV shows that direct you mm-hmm. to drag, and yes. you start out loving drag through Drag Race, and if you really love drag, then you go and find mm-hmm. all the other drag that's out there, and you learn about the history and you learn the context and stuff. And then some people are happy just staying, you know, with a Drag Race education. But I think what you said that I really, really resonates with me is that, you know, it's drag on television.
Yeah.
Like, the worst episode of Drag Race is still one of the best hours of TV you're going to see.
Without a doubt. No. And I think that I also found myself recently, because I just did a group tour with a bunch of queens. And I
Oh, done, did you now?
Yes. And I hadn't done that in a while. And it was interesting because I've learned that there are people that are performers and there's people that are reality stars. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge difference. I think rarely is there that one person that can cross over to the two where there's substance outside of the idea of them. But you know as well as I do, I mean, you were much younger than me when you did the show, that the business of it, the people, the fandom can totally make you fucking crazy. You know yeah. what I mean? And I think a lot of these people believe that they're stars. And I go, what have you done? Like, you know, please. Like, you know, I don't understand that the word legend, the word icon, the word this is used far too freely nowadays, because these people are useless and they think that there's something like, you've done nothing. You lasted 3 episodes on a reality show. Kudos, people know your name. But to me, I just find it robs people that are authentically talented, people that have paved the way, people that have worked their asses off.
But what you're talking about applies to drag, but it applies to the industry.
Oh, in general, completely.
You know, because there are so many talented performers out there who are lesser known
yes.
than, you know, someone who fucking became a meme and, yeah. you know. And those people are great, too. I love that there's room for everyone. But, yeah, of course, I'm drawn to people with talent outside of a catchphrase.
Without a doubt.
Of just being a kooky personality.
I know? Just think that sometimes that without knowing the history of drag in general, that a lot of people are missing out on what is there, you know? I mean, a lot of the queens now that are on the show have no idea what it's like to work in a bar for $50. Have no idea. I mean, back in my day, you had to print out flyers like P-Town and pass them out at the bar. There was no phones, you know? You had to actually meet your friends at 10 p.m. I mean, I was doing a show in New Orleans on Monday nights at 2 in the morning. Yeah. 2 in the morning on a Monday night. Like, what the fuck?
I feel both ways about it, because I feel like my time
crawling on my hands and knees in the diviest dive bars.
Kinky bitch.
You know? And, you know, many numbers involved me on my knees, you know. I started drag at 15. I was working in bars starting at about like 17, lying about my age, working in bars. And I could work in the bars as an 18-year-old.
Because you looked old.
Yeah, because I always looked old. Yeah. No one ever carded me in drag, you know, because they're always like, this old lady clearly belongs here. And I really value that education that I had of having to really like work my ass off to get paid $40 a night and collect those tips and get the next gig and go from gig to gig to gig. But then I also think it is a mark of progress that maybe now, because we also know that some of those gay bars are very toxic, horrible environments.
Without a doubt.
Like, I don't necessarily want every young queen to have to go through some of the experiences I had, deal with some of the people I had to deal with. And at the same time, like, I want them to receive that education somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, having to fight for yourself before there was a TV show that kind of like had a formula set up for you. I think that's a valuable education.
Without a doubt. And I think that it gives me great appreciation. And I know this is going to sound grand on some level, but when you work in a bar on a Monday night at 2 o'clock in the morning and there's 30 people, or two. It gives me a great appreciation when I am at Carnegie Hall or when I am in Wembley Arena with 12,000 people.
Absolutely.
I still know that I'm a lucky fucker, but I also know I can appreciate it so much more because I've been on the opposite end of it. Yeah. And I know that it can go away at any minute. And, you know, it's not always guaranteed. So I'm always fascinated by the attitudes and the grandness when they've accomplished nothing. So that, to me, I go, girl, like, you know, you must really love yourself. And I don't. So that's why I think I just come from a different place. So I am appreciative of all those moments, and all those shitty times led to the good ones.
And with the context of all of this, would you say yourself, are you the winner of the winners? Are you the best winner of all time?
No, I don't. That's where people, I think, go wrong. I had this conversation, you know, Asia O'Hara, she was on this tour with me, and she sat down and she said, what moment do you think in your life post-Drag Race, do you think that you actually made it? And then she starts to tell me about a moment that she felt that she made it. And I looked at her and said, I don't think I felt that. I don't feel that. If you do say, well, I felt I meant, then you're just fucking yourself. I have no concept of that. And I think with Drag Race in particular, everybody was chosen for a different reason. Mm-hmm. That particular season amongst those people, that's just what worked out for the show. So I don't know. I wouldn't compare myself to you, and I wouldn't compete with you. I wouldn't do the same with Sharon. I mean, it's all special for different reasons. I mean, Bebe Zahara, useless. But the rest... I mean, you know, she did that song about a banjo. I don't get it. Anyway,
I loved that
song. Oh, catchy, but there's a banjo. What the fuck? Anyway, but that's a different... So no, I don't think that. I think that people that like me like you. People that hate you hate me. You know, it's you just don't know.
I made peace with the fact that, you know, I had my moment of like... It was... not the easiest thing to feel like the Grand Supreme. And of course, you know, my season was happening at the same time as American Horror Story Coven, so it was hard not to compare myself to Jessica Lange, you know.
Oh, of course.
I guess I was more of a Sarah Paulson, you know, less of a... I guess Sharon was more the Jessica Lange, and I was the Sarah Paulson. But, you know, it is... it does kind of fuck with your self-esteem a little bit when you crown the next winner, period. Yeah. You know, because you are told for like a year, you're the Grand High Supreme.
Wait, but you remember we had a year in between our seasons. Yeah. Now it's like every 5 seconds is a new season in a new country. So it's even interesting to see how that's changed so much. I mean, we had time. I remember vividly it was because Brandon Voss used to hire me to host the finale parties. Mm-hmm. And all of you guys came to New York for your season. We were there. And... the day that we did it, I was hosting with Michelle Visage, who I did not know. We had met once, twice before, but I did not know her. And that was the day I found out that I was going to be on Drag Race. I found out that day that I was leaving the Thursday after to go film Drag Race. And at the end of the night, they're crowning you. You're there. You're crying. There's like I think Randy and Fenton, Michelle Visage, you, the other girls, and there's a big check. And I remember standing in the back going, I got to get out of this picture because this is not going to look good next season. If I'm on the show, they're going to go, oh, conspiracy. This is all. So I was like inching my way out of the photo going, I don't want to be here. But I was so excited that I was going on the show. And after seeing you win, I went, okay, so they do like theatrical people. They do like people that are fun. You know, that was good. I mean, that was the great thing about Sharon and your season is that, you know, you weren't the typical drag performer, you know, that it is now. Now it's a little different, I think.
I never felt ready to go on Drag Race until I was like, oh, there's some queens I could go on and have a similar experience because I do something kind of similar. But Latrice always says, and I think this mantra is brilliant, is there's just room for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, there's room for everyone. And that goes for producers too.
Sure.
You know, like when producers are fighting over like exclusivity and like you can't work with them and with me and blah, 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 blah. It's like there's enough to go around.
Of course.
No one's having a shortage. Like I know there's, we all know there's a day that the bubble might pop and we all might go back to gigging in bars and let's count our blessings now. But,
I think with this COVID situation, it's definitely pushed a huge reset, you know, for all of us, like doing podcasts or doing everything from home. We've gotten so comfortable with it. I mean, I put on a pair of shoes to do this tour. Girl, Corona feet. My feet were like, oh my God. But we were in them every night. You were someplace else. So I think that there's a huge reset for all of us. And I think what's amazing is obviously drag is on TV on every channel, every hour of the day for everyone to watch. But it'll be interesting to see how it transcends when we go back to our regularly scheduled lives. You know, I think everybody being trapped at home is looking for any form of entertainment, you know?
It really has. You know, I was worried that podcasts might be done.
Yeah.
You know, and then COVID happened. And you're right. Like, we're hungry for any form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. People who can adjust.
Yes.
Have found a way. Some people have freaking thrived in this environment.
Yeah.
You know? I know my introverted side is like, oh my God, there's a day that I'm going to have to go back to. Like, I miss being on a stage in front of an audience more than anything.
Yeah.
But then I also think like, oh my God, I have to go back into those situations where I'm like, everyone's looking at me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just on this tour where there was fucking cars. Cars. I mean, the shit I say, someone can just run me over. Like, it was tempting, I'm sure. But I was like, okay, it's fun to be back on stage, but I thought, what the fuck? There's cars here. This is completely weird. There was, you know, no one, you couldn't hear laughter. You couldn't see people because they were in a vehicle. Yeah. So it was weird. So I just decided to just, you know, rotate their tires and change their oil while they were parked up there. Because what else are you going to do?
Was it a fun challenge to adapt to performing for cars?
It was.
Of course, I'm thinking of cars from the like Pixar movie.
No,
like you're performing for an audience of talking sentient cars.
Not the case. No, I literally was like, I had taken a photo. I was at Carnegie Hall, which was lovely. And then I took a picture in the parking lot. And I said, this is exactly what I fucking deserve. I mean, this is it. No, it was nice to get out of my house. It was nice to put your toe in the water. You know, it was nice to remind me of like, okay, this is what we do it for. And to be very honest, much as I give them shit, the girls were great. You know, they were a lot of fun to work with. Oh, I had a separate dressing room. But but in it, you go, you know, it was nice just to be on the road and doing something outside of going to the grocery store or up the street, which is what I've been doing.
Watching your dogs.
Yes.
The drama play out. Just, I've got three cats and that's been my ongoing soap opera.
See, there you go. Yeah, you find out more about your pets. It's wild.
They find out too much about you.
Yeah, they hate me.
Speaking of adapting to quarantine and COVID, you've got a podcast now as well. How is that going for
it's
you?
It's wild. These people from Starburns Audio had been after me for like 4 years. Like, we want to do a podcast. And as you know, when you're traveling, and I am not tech savvy because I'm grandma when it comes to everything, they were like, we want to do it. I'm like, well, I don't know where I'm going to be. You know how it is with travel. Sometimes, you know, flights are changed. You can't even dedicate a certain day. Also, I like to do a lot of shows in a row. I will do at least 5 in a different city every night in a row. So it was very hard to try to figure it out. So here it is, a year into COVID. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I should do something. So that's when I said yes and I started. It's just, it's nice, I guess, because A, you don't have to get in drag, so it's not that stress. And I get to talk to people that I like and respect, which is amazing.
Yeah. I'm definitely feeling that with this podcast. You know, I was really honored when Alaska and Willem and Dipper and Will and everyone working on these podcasts, you know, said, we just want to connect you with people you're inspired by and just have conversations. And I'm like, that sounds like a dream. What's the catch? But so far it's
no catch. Isn't that crazy? I know. And I mean, I'm like, wow, this is good.
Now, I think diehard Bianca fans know that kind of simultaneously with your drag career in New York, you also worked as a costumer for Broadway. And we were talking a little bit about this. You know, what are some of your favorite moments? I have a favorite story you told me, if you don't mind retelling me.
I don't know which one it is.
It was of Elaine Stritch coming into the costume
it's
shop.
The best, yeah.
And the collar.
Yeah,
so why don't you tell that story?
It's genius because here was this place. The first place I worked at was Barbara Matera. And you wouldn't know the name, but they created, I mean, literally every fucking Broadway show from West Side Story on. I mean, they did everything. And so I was lucky enough to get to work there. And Elaine Stritch, who I love, and I mean, who doesn't love Elaine Stritch, was coming in to do to have some of her personal clothes altered. Now, Elaine Stritch lives in an alternate world. She really did, because she lived at the Carlisle, which is one of the most expensive hotels there is. And from what I was told, didn't even pay rent at this hotel in Manhattan. And the deal was that she would have to do two shows a year. That's her deal. So she also had a husband that she was married to for many years that had English Muffin Company. So for holidays, we would get a pallet of fucking English muffins that she would deliver to all of us at the costume shop. So her deal, being old school, was that she would bring in her personal clothes and it would get altered, you know, and that's just Delaine. So she'd come in with all that school marm drag, black, white, gray, navy blue, cream, and it would all be laid out. And so this one particular time, she came in with like 11 different outfits. And she's doing a benefit at Lincoln Center with Barbara Cook. So she's there and she brings in all the clothes. And now I am trying to get, we had this old school, I always think single white female. We had one of those old elevators that had the chain bars that you had to basically get into the box, pull the chain, then get out and close it and whatever. So I am getting off the elevator. She's brought in 11 different things that need to be altered. My boss is at the desk. She's in the doorway with her assistant. Now, I can't get in because she's in the doorway. And he says, Elaine, these are 11 outfits. Who is going to pay for this? She goes, send the bill to Lincoln Center. And he's like, Elaine, you're doing a benefit with Barbara Cook. You can't wear 11 outfits. Send the bill to Lincoln Center. And he's like, okay, Elaine, yes, we will get this taken care of. She goes, cut the fucking shit and send the bill to Lincoln Center. Coming out, she sees me. Hiya, kid. Gets into the elevator. I go in. He calls Lincoln Center. They said, let's pay the bill. It's easier to pay the bill than to argue with Elaine Stritch, which is genius when you think about it. But she also had a series of white shirts that were made for her that we used to make at the shop. Basic white shirts she could have bought. She would bring them in, and on the collar, when it had makeup on it, we would have to remove the collar and then put the dirt on the outside where the collar would roll over. Isn't that fucking wild?
I think it's frugal.
It is, but not at $50 an hour at a Broadway costume shop. She would bring in her bras and we would replace everything but the cup. Like literally everything. So that was Elaine. I loved every minute of her. She was the best. I mean, wild. She even one day, the first day I met her, because I was excited she was coming in, my boss at the time said, all right, you can come into the fitting. Now, Elaine is crazy. And I'm like, I know who she is. I was excited. I got into the room. She's completely naked and she's standing with like a little nude bra and nude panties. Not naked. And she's standing in front of a three-way mirror. So there's like four of her looking at me. And crotchety as can be, I was living at the moment. She goes, they go, this is Roy, my new assistant. Hi, Roy. I was like, hi. She says, where are you from? I said, I'm from New Orleans. She goes, oh, I love New Orleans. Dead silence for like 2 minutes. I'm like, okay, what do I do? And she goes, I had my best drink in New Orleans. I go, okay, she's back with me. Okay, she's back. I had best drink with me. I was there with my friend George. George and someone else. I can't remember who the hell it was. I'm like, oh, okay. It gets quiet. Real quiet for another minute. I go, so did you like New Orleans? Oh, I love New Orleans. Oh, I remember who it was. And wait, now the name escapes me, but I was cackling. She goes, George was her friend, and it was Tennessee Williams. That was the one she forgot. Tennessee Williams. And I'm like, how did you forget Tennessee Williams? And I'm just thinking of Elaine Stritch, Tennessee Williams drinking in New Orleans, but she remembers her friend George. It was George and I can't remember who else it was. Tennessee Williams. I'm like, motherfucker. Like, how old are you when you could forget Tennessee Williams?
talk about, you know, the old guard of the entertainment industry. I mean, she did everything. I listened to her at Liberty the concert best. Constantly. It inspires me all the time.
Yes.
It inspired me to examine my own relationship to alcohol because she
has been through it.
She's very candid about that. And then I also just love this, like, her documentary. She's like, I don't drink anymore. Mm-hmm. Wink, I'll have one Cosmopolitan.
Yes, I love it.
I can't have more than one because I'm a diabetic. Just the one, but no ice. Make sure there's
no ice.
Don't interrupt me.
Yeah. Don't take up valuable alcohol space with ice. No, I want it to hit me hard if I only get one.
You have worked with, you've worked alongside some really amazing people.
Yeah.
Joan Rivers, Rachel Dratch, Bob Hope, Don Rickles. Fanny Bryce, Charlie Chaplin, Marcel Marceau.
I was Fanny Bryce's understudy. I was the one who gave Charlie Chaplin that makeup. No, what was so great about that was because I was a huge fan, like you are, of Broadway and mm-hmm. old Hollywood or anybody that has been a hoofer or a gypsy or a performer. So when you're working at the shop, you know, everybody came through. You know, Angela Lansbury was one that I was like, oh my God, she was like the sweetest and loveliest little grandmother thing, you know? And then you've got people like Cheetah Rivera, who's just unbelievable, you know? Like to be in the... Sutton Foster was like the loveliest thing. And she was so young at the time because we did Drowsy Chaperone. That's her little red coat at the end of Show Off. But she was lovely too. And it was just like that thing where I was a kid enjoying and I loved my job. It was just the best it was. And then the company went down.
Well, you know, I mean, and you bring up a great thing is the biggest stars, you know, like Elaine sounds gruff, but it doesn't sound like she was needlessly cruel. It doesn't sound like
she sent us English muffins. She did that. But also, what you see is what you get with mm-hmm. Elaine Stritch, you know? I mean, I don't think anybody would go, oh, she's a bitch. No, it's just who Elaine was.
I think, especially with drag, some of the people we idolize, there can be this notion that to be a true star, to be the true diva, you have to walk in and systematically degrade people in mm-hmm. the room so that you're the top dog. But really, the people with the most longevity in this business are the people that people want to work with.
People skills.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the amazing thing. When we were at the shop, I think that I was not there for it, but the horror story was one of the worst people ever was Raquel Welch. And you go... Of all people, Raquel Welch, no fucking talent, but she's impossible. So yeah, that's kind of wild to think about because she had gone in and done Victor Victoria. She was replacing Julie Andrews and after Liza did it. And so she had gone in and they said she was just a nightmare. And I'm going, who the fuck cares about Raquel Welch? Like, why is she fussing? Be happy you have a job, Raquel. I mean, she makes cute wigs, but other than that, I'm like, Raquel. Yeah, that blows my mind. You know, when your bullshit outweighs your talent, I find that to be repulsive.
I think it goes without saying that you as an entertainer, you get on stage, you say what's on your mind.
Yes.
I'm very curious. You know, I have been to a handful of Bianca Dovia shows. I find you the very most entertaining backstage in the dressing room when we're just cackling and cracking each other up. I've seen you do your Bette Davis impression countless times. Love it. I wonder, you know, a lot of stand-up comedians, I think, and let's, you know, you are a drag queen, but you are also a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. You know, you are equally that to being a drag queen. I am very fascinated with how comedy is going to evolve as we as a society are starting to shift to more consciousness, more mindfulness.
Yeah.
Where do you find the balance between maintaining the brand that you've built for yourself, but also, you know, like acknowledging, you know, what's going on in the world?
I think it's a tricky world we live in now. And I was a huge Joan Rivers fan, Don Rickles fan. And, you know, they cross many lines. Also, the joke being themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think I've come to terms with the fact that For instance, doing this drive and drag tour, it wasn't my tour. We are outdoors. There's other people there to, there's people there to see other queens, which can get very, very tricky as far as material is concerned. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm doing something in a theater and, you know, those people come, they know what they're getting into. They know that I'm a rotted person. They know what it is. So it's almost like a safe space. And I think most comedians will say that one of the reasons why we don't like to film stuff, because things taken out of context, if there is no context anymore. Mm-hmm. So what happens is if someone takes a clip and Bianca says this, and then there's no explanation or what the setup was or what it's about, then people just jump to all conclusions and then it becomes problem. I think, my age has helped me because I'm not a people pleaser. I can't cater to the people of social media because I don't care, because that's not my audience. Mm-hmm. And I think self-awareness is very important. Going, look, this is what I do. It may not be for you, and that's okay. I'm not trying to win people over, which is where they also, you know, with this fandom of Drag Race, they put you on this pedestal. No drag queen belongs on a pedestal. Every drag queen I know is rotted. And all the ones who claim to be so sweet are worse than me. I could show you texts from Nina West. I could show you texts from Fendelicrem. From you! I could show you the rot. I'm just not afraid to say it on stage. And I just go, this is just how I think and what I do. It's not for everyone, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's helped me. But I think if I grew up with social media or grew up with the burden of feeling though I need to be liked by everyone, it would really fuck with my head.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's a really poignant statement that the, you know, like you are, like I said, of a before time of drag.
Yeah.
You are of the old guard. And I've really just, you know, enjoyed watching the way you've navigated the audience that Drag Race has brought into your life versus the audience you're used to and the
sure.
audience. And I do
or
think...
Or lack of audience. I mean, for many years.
I do think there is a thing, and I've said this, having been someone who's done roast tours.
Yeah.
Which a roast kind of seems at its core contradictory to the message I put forth as a
sure.
performer. You know, I'm a very like, I'm the butt of my own jokes.
Yeah.
I'm very like, let's celebrate our differences. Let's lift people up. And then I go on a roast where I'm systematically tearing down my best
yeah.
friends and sisters.
And you're rotted and you're perfect for it. That's the good thing.
But there is this, you know, when you go into that audience, the act of buying the ticket, knowing mm-hmm. that you're going to see a roast,
yes.
knowing the history of roasts, that is a layer of mutual consent between the performers and the audience.
Yes.
And when someone takes out their phone and then puts it on the internet,
yeah.
they're removing that layer of giving the person the opportunity to say, this is not for me. You know?
Or context. The, mm-hmm. Where is the context lying into this? It's like it's the aha, I got you moment. They always want to go, well, I got her. This is what she did. She's not perfect. And you go, well, first of all, I shouldn't be on a pedestal. You know, I'm a man in a fucking wig. I'm not curing cancer. I mean, I'm not a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Like, what planet are you on that you're thinking that drag queens are special and fabulous? It's like, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. So I think that layer of because I did a reality show and you think you know me and you think that you have some rights to me and tell me what I should be doing. No, that doesn't apply to me.
Well, I think this kind of goes for both of us, is that because of going on a reality TV show, which is about drag,
mm-hmm.
but really you spend... In many cases, more time getting to know the artist who creates the drag.
Correct.
So I felt on my season, you really got to know Jarek Hoffer, the artist, more than you got to know Jinx Monsoon, the character.
Correct.
And that caused difficulty for me for a while, because people would come to my shows after watching Drag Race thinking what they were going to see was an hour-long inspirational speech.
Oh, or just you sleeping.
Or just me sleeping.
Yeah, an hour and a half of her napping.
An hour and a half of water off a duck's back.
Yeah, yeah. Or kumbaya. I love everyone. Drag Race is amazing. Everybody say love. Well, that's not...
Not all there is to
no.
it. And my shows, you know, like I don't hold back any language.
Right.
I'm very sex positive. That leads to me telling a lot of really filthy stories.
Yes.
No one expected. And I kind of had to work against my edit for a few years before people knew what to expect from my shows versus what to expect from me at the meet and greet.
Agreed.
Because they still get to meet the person on Drag Race at the meet and greet.
Yeah.
I'm not that, you know, I'm not that foul-mouthed, you know, boozy slut at the meet and greet.
No,
that's
I mean, I play on stage. Unless they play extra.
So these days.
I totally agree. I mean, that's always what I hear is that the people say, oh my God, you're so much nicer in person than I expected you to be. I'm like, you paid extra to meet my tired ass. How the hell am I going to be rude to you now? I can't. You're right here. You know, so it is a different dynamic. Like I said, you know, if you bullshit outweighs your talent, but you, if you are a bitch and a troll on stage, you've got to be the opposite off stage, you know?
Let them, you know, because they do fall in love with you, the person, simultaneously as falling in love with the drag that you create.
Totally.
So you do want to find ways to give them a little bit of both, but it is like, don't come to my show expecting me to be in confessional mode.
Oh God, no. Right. Right.
You know, like I script my shows. I one time had a critic say my shows seem too scripted, and I'm like,
well,
"That's because they're scripted.
That's a show.
Like,
yeah.
I guess this is your first show.
Yeah,
<You know? laughs> and it's not all scripted. I'll call a person out in the audience. Yeah. You know,
but there's a format and a structure. You would hope. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I totally agree. I was told I was not a drag queen. I really wasn't a real drag queen because I didn't lip sync. Now what the fuck? Now also. At the time, Drag Race, the point was not to lip sync because you were in the bottom. So it's so confusing. Now it's a different game. But that's where the experts come in drag in general, which makes me cackle when they have an opinion or a thought or a view. I'm like, fuck yourself.
Well, I always say all opinions are valid. Not all opinions are equal.
There you go.
I could have a funky mole on my back and I could go ask the maitre d' at the hotel, does this mole look cancerous to you? And they can have an opinion on it. That doesn't mean
this
anything.
Analogy is killing me.
Oh, I don't know why it's always the
you're
first
finally
thing.
Addressing that mole. Okay. I'm not concerned with the mole. I'm concerned with the hair coming out of it.
Oh shit, that's attached. Now, speaking of Drag Race, your time on Drag Race,
yes.
You know.
After you won.
You know, I think another thing we have in common.
That we're both common.
Is that, you know, certainly I did not win based on my fashion, you know.
Oh, I won for my beauty, honey. Let me tell you.
And you're the first one to make the joke that you wore the same dress down that runway every time and you won, you know, and I think that's because your runway wasn't what you were bringing to the competition.
Correct.
It was flawless.
No,
you know?
but don't
the
you...
one silhouette was flawless and looks lovely on you.
But I also had a week and a half before I left, which is one of the things that I try to talk to people about that makes me cackle, because it wasn't until we were done with the show, because you and I both discussed how fearful we were about doing anything wrong before we actually got on set. Mm-hmm. Like following the rules, 5 bags, under 50 pounds, you know, all of that fuckery. Don't bring your computer, all that shit that you're not supposed to do. So I had a week and a half. It wasn't until after filming that I was found out from the other girls that they were like a month and a half, six weeks. I was like, so I don't know if somebody, I don't know if I was up for casting first or if someone, you know, backed out or somebody didn't pass their psych test and then I got smuggled in. Mm-hmm. So that was that. And also the fact that I'm a 37-year-old drag queen who knows what works on me. And at that time, Rue was wearing the same shit because, you know, she knew what works on her. So it's a weird dynamic now when I look back at it, and the show is completely different. Now girls are, you know, mortgaging their home to go on the show to have all these costumes made by these designers. That wasn't what we had then. It was different, you know?
I've heard some, you know, like comments that like really 4, 5, 6, those were the last seasons. I was dirt poor when I went on.
I was too.
Everything I had was loaned to me.
Of course.
Or I splurged. It was like I took out everything in savings after putting myself through college, what little I had.
Yeah.
But I think we were among the last seasons where you could go on dirt poor.
Without a doubt.
And you know, I got read constantly for my fashion, but that's not what I was there to showcase.
Right.
You know? I did enough for my fashion to stay in
the show,
you know, to
right,
stay
right.
in the show. But I think it was really other things that I was bringing to the competition that got me to the end.
Without a doubt. And I think that's when I say to people that it's a completely different show now. That's not a read. It's just, it's larger. It's different. There's the expectation and the bar is somewhere else. I mean, I know a girl that was on season 13 that was $40,000 in debt, you know, on this current season before it even starts. And I'm going, how'd that work? Like, how? What fuckery? Because you're not even going to be able to make that money back, especially during COVID. Nobody's traveling season after season. It's just like this car pile up that are you going to get that chance to do it? So that's when I have to go, grateful that I had the opportunity that I had and the experience I had and the time that I've had since then. Because now it's, what, 7 or 8 years since we did it.
And it is, you know, it's, I mean, drag is ever evolving, like every art form. So you can't, like, really... You can dig your heels in the mud and say, I'm staying here, and it'll leave you behind. But I think it's when you're someone already established in the business, it's finding, like, the right moments to bring the trends into your work, to, like, update certain things.
Without a doubt.
You know, because if you're not willing to do that... You're lazy. Yeah. You know, like, kind of like what we were talking about with comedy. It's like, if you're too scared of the challenge to, like, update and adapt your work to match what you want to put out into the world, to match what, you know, audiences expect from you, whether that means, like, completely reformatting your material or just, like, making tweaks here and there.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to do that, then you're a lazy artist, you know?
Without doubt, yeah. And you learn. I mean, when you're out there and you say a joke that doesn't land, I mean, every joke is not going to land, number one. And if it doesn't, trust me, I don't remember what makes people laugh. I remember what they didn't laugh at. And that will adjust. And you'll do it 2 or 3 nights. And then you'll go, never again. So that you learn about yourself. And I think that's the process. So when people go, well, that's not even funny. Or I don't. Okay. But not every hairstylist makes a pretty hair, too. Not every perm comes out successful. You know, it's what it is. But the people that already hate you, which is part of the game, the people that already hate you are going to find something to hate you in. You know, it's either that or they're going to compare you. And the thing is that I don't care about either one of them. Or when they throw a success story or so-and-so's doing this and so-and-so's doing that. Like, for instance, music videos. That was one of my favorites recently. Is someone said, you know, well, music videos, and it's just amazing. Look, she's out there and she's got this album and she's got this. And I go, if music videos made money, I would have done 12. Like, for me, it's a business. So I look at things a little differently, but I also have to tune out the noise and the garbage and, you know, and realize that that's someone's opinion, you know?
I think a lot of what has made you as strong in this industry as you have been...
Is liquor.
Is, well, I mean, it's no small contributor, but I always said, you know, I always said, well, yeah, Bianca, she might be the winner of all winners. She's old. She's had 60 years.
Let me have something.
She's had 60 years to work at this. You know, I mean, I had been doing drag for like 14 or 15 years by the time I was on Drag Race, but I was still 23. There was still a lot of life to, like, learn.
You still have a lot of life. No, and I forget how young you are just because you always seem like an old soul. You always seem, no, in a good way. I consider, like, you're together. You're aware of what you're doing. You're aware of your drag. You're aware of the art that you're creating. And that's, like, the special that you did with Dela. It's amazing that you guys put this together and did this on your own. On your own, meaning producing and putting it out there, putting your brand of comedy humor together. That's what this is. That's when I get excited. Yeah. When I see people thriving in it in some form that brings them joy, I'm happy to see that happen for other people. Because to me, that's what drag is. If you can't get it, then you go create it, you know, and you make it happen. And it has, as much as we talk about Drag Race in particular, that's a facet of my life. And I can't change it. It happened. It is what it is. But Jesus Christ, there's so much more to the world. And it was an amazing platform. But no, I don't have an opinion on the season 13 girls. No, I don't have any advice for the girl who's in the UK on this. I don't know. Everybody has a different path.
Well, that's, I think, something that speaks to our friendship that we've had. You and I do very, very different styles.
Without a doubt, yeah.
And there's, you know, there's overlap in our sensibility, but not a lot of overlap in our content.
No.
But we have such a mutual respect for each other, and there's room for both types of stuff, you know? And I always find it very funny when the fans of Bianca Del Rio, or, like, the fans of Willem, who's also, you know, known for... you know, she speaks her mind. I see these fans of Bianca and Willem think that their way to win your approval is to tear down your sisters.
Which is
when
so
nothing
silly.
Bores me more than watching, like, you know, someone on the internet try to read a drag queen, because it's like, you want to poke that bear? Really?
the literal bear. But the crazy thing I find is that anybody that I go after, for instance, Manila is a friend of mine. I make Jiggly's a friend of mine. Like, they know me, I know them. And they're, Monet is another one. One of the few people, Bob, that you can still fucking cackle and joke with and say something ridiculous online. Lady Bunny, who gets it. Coco Peru. It's like, it's not that serious. And they're friends of mine. And you don't know my connection to them or what it's about. So, like, don't try to fucking read into something.
Yeah.
It's not that serious. And believe me, that's what drag queens used to fucking do. Drag queens constantly would rib on each other, say nasty comments. And that's the side of it that I miss, you know?
Well, I do. I mean, I do see people saying, like, do we want to keep, like, reading each other and roasting each other? Is that the energy we want to put out in the world? And it's like, I can see why, like, on paper, that seems like maybe not the direction we're moving in or want to move in, specifically within the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah.
But then I also think I have felt my strongest after spending an hour being read for filth.
Yes!
On stage by people I trust to do that.
Of course.
And our friendships are strengthened by the fact that we are able. I think it's, for me, one of the things I love about it is the things that we're making jokes about are the things that used to tear me down.
Completely. And you're in control of it now.
Now I'm the one laughing at the joke.
Of course.
And I am taking the power away from anyone who tries to use these things about me to try to get in my head and tear me down.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, wait, actually, watch me laugh at it and watch
Without
you
a doubt.
Lose all your power of disrupting my
Without
life.
A doubt. And I think that's part of the game. It's also sense of humor and self-awareness. There's nothing anyone can say about me that I don't already know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like I'm going to be like, if someone said, oh my God, her nose is huge. What? You know, I mean, I'm aware. I see it.
I have to say, and I don't bring this up often because I don't want people to think I'm fishing for, like, no, you look beautiful. It's like, hello, I have gained weight. I was on TV almost 9 years ago. The comments that really kind of blow my mind is when they go, am I correct? Or has Jinx gained some weight? Or, like, does Jinx know she's gained weight?
Girl.
It's my fucking body. But how can I spend this much time with this body and not know that it's larger than it used to be?
But no, but also you were a 20-year-old on the show.
I was a fucking twink.
Of course.
And now I'm a mom.
Hey, honey, taking it back. No, it's also this idea that the standard of what they think it should be is this, you know? And I've even had people say to me, you know, Bianca, I just don't like what you've become, and you've just become nasty. Newsflash, I was always nasty.
You were always
Newsflash,
nasty.
I was consistently nasty.
One of the first things you said to me was,
get out of my house.
It was the night I won. The night I won, I've got the crown on my fucking head. I'm feeling as powerful as
I
can
do?
Be. And you said, Jinx, come take a picture with me before your beard grows back.
Well,
here I am. I'm on the top of the world. And your way of connecting with me was to be like, don't forget.
It's over.
Don't forget what lies underneath that thin veneer. Well, not so thin. It's a pile of grease paint. But
that's funny. And I have that picture. It's a picture of you and I
in a service elevator.
And a service elevator at XL. Yeah, that's wild.
It was a wonderful, crazy night. I ended up meeting some Broadway actor at the after party.
Ooh.
And everyone was partying in my room. You know, because I had just won, so everyone's partying in my room, and I come back. I'm like, everyone, would you give us about, what do you think, 45 minutes to take a quick shower?
Clear us out. He's going to help with my makeup. Yes.
And it was like, I mean, nothing makes you feel more powerful than after you put the crown on your head and then take some big dick Broadway actor back to your room.
That's talent. Now I wonder who it was. It wasn't Harvey Fierstein. Was it? I saw him in your room.
Alaska's called me the trade wizard for years.
Really?
Because she's like, I don't, she's like, Jinx will be like, oh my goodness, I think I might have sex tonight. And then ta-da.
There it is. Well, you're committed. You're committed, bitch. You do it. All I remember from that night, I mean, aside from, I took a picture with you, you were, and we snapped that photo, but I also remember that night, Alaska was so drunk. There's a genius photo I need to send you. And it's all of us on stage. She's on the floor. You know, she's devastated that she didn't win. I think her mother is there at one point helping her. So there's her mother. There's her on the floor. There's Michelle Visage and me just standing there staring at the ground like, whatever. And someone captioned it saying, Bianca, always there to help. It's just me looking at her going, bitch.
That was a really, I've told this story before, but Alaska told me earlier in the day.
Yeah.
If I lose, you need to know that I'm a sore loser. But it has nothing to do with you.
Of course.
Just going to be my way of processing it.
Oh.
And she threw a little courtyard temper tantrum.
Yeah.
And at the last moment before she stormed into her room and slammed her door, she looked me dead in the eyes and winked at me.
Oh.
Like, don't worry. It's not about you, honey.
Oh, that's
like,
good, though.
And that's why I say, like, you know, we can be in real competition with each other. And our industry, that's you're constantly in competition, whether you like it or not. And more than anything, you're in competition with yourself. You're like making sure that you're every year you're taking a step forward and you're like, you know, you're improving what you're putting out into the world. That's just a given. But that doesn't mean that the friendships aren't also real, you know?
No, and I think you and I have talked about it. When you see someone with some, you know, success or them going into another avenue, let's say, you know, a TV show or something, and you've done tons of, you know, guest spots on TV. When I see it, my reaction is, good for her. Second reaction is, how'd she get that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just...
That's real.
That's real life, you know? And I think that's important. I mean, that's as an actor, as a singer, I'm sure everybody goes through it. But you find your path, you know?
Yeah.
You find your path in your way. And I think as I've gotten older, I figured out this is what works for me, you know? And that's what I choose to do. I like touring. I like having a live audience. That I like.
Even if it weren't drag queens, I call it also gay jealousy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, because... being queer used to be something that held you back.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you see a new role created for a queer person
mm-hmm.
and then it goes to another queer person,
yeah, and you're like, wait a minute.
Oh, that could have been fun. You know? So it's hard not to be like, oh, I would have loved to have done that. But for me, how I've resolved those
mm-hmm.
feelings is that as long as it's going to one of the sisters,
sure.
if there's been a drag role created, like with a drag queen in mind,
yeah.
and it ends up going to a cis white pretty boy,
that's different. Yeah.
I'm like, I'd rather see any of my sisters than another, you know, cis white pretty boy who doesn't really need to be the one filling those shoes.
Agreed.
You know? Like, there are enough talented drag queens who can handle any acting role you want to hand them, any comedic role you want to hand them, that we don't need to be going outside of the drag queen talent pool to find some person, put them in drag for a day and then call them a drag queen, you know?
Putting them in drag. You know what I'm always fascinated by is whenever you're seeing, you know, you're in Hollywood, it happens so often. It's like, let's praise this actor who, for instance, when Chicago was going on, there was all this stuff about Renee Zellweger going, she learned how to sing, she learned how to dance. Fuck her! There's tons of people that know how to do this shit. We don't need to listen to her and screeching a song. Oh, let's give her an award because she tried. It's like, I don't get it. Then Catherine Zeta-Jones comes in from the West End, who is a singer, who's a tapper, and won an Oscar. And I'm like, thank you. That's what it should be. It's like, I think that's where the self-awareness comes in. No one's going to hire me to be a Disney princess. I'm aware I'm the villain, but it's self-awareness, you know? And I think that when people think, well, I should have that. Why? Why should you have it? You know, it didn't happen and it didn't work out that way. You can't be bitter boots about it. You just have to go, that's what it is.
Yeah, a thick skin is
I'm never going to be the ingenue. No.
Those days have passed.
Oh, honey.
I want to know, do you have a bright spot that whenever you like are sitting there counting your blessings and your dollars, do you have a moment where you're like that? You know, you talked about this with Asia, not a moment where you feel like I've made it, I'm done, but a moment where you're like, God, I am so amazed that I got to do that.
This past year, thanks to COVID and being home, and it just kind of worked out for me because I was in London doing a musical and I was coming home and then I was...
I saw you in that musical.
I was at musical.
You were on that stage.
I saw everything from that scene. You know what you always say? Ooh, no one does it like you. Because it's not really a compliment. But I was doing that and I was coming home to get my tonsils out at 45. Getting my tonsils out because I have a lot of vocal issues and getting a house.
What?
Yeah. And so wildly, the surgery was canceled. But then I got this house. So I've been home in my house trying to set up my new life that I've always wanted. And it's been that reflective thing where you're kind of like, wow, you know, because usually my world was just on the go, which I love. So being in one place and having, you know, reliving stuff going, oh yeah, that happened. Oh yeah, that happened. Because it had been a whirlwind since Drag Race, since we filmed in 2013. So it's really been forever for me that you've just been on the go because I like it that way. So there's little moments that stick out. You know, I got to do Carnegie Hall, which is crazy pants, you know, mm-hmm. or to do Wembley Arena or to sit with Joan Rivers before she died. You know, like that to me is just wild. And I'm so grateful for those things. And all of it wouldn't have happened without Drag Race, without a doubt. Those things, I sit back and go, wow, is anything exciting like that going to happen again? I mean, until I did this with you. this is now on my list.
You've just been...
I couldn't have lived my life without having...
Chomping at the bit.
A magical experience with Jinx Monsoon.
This impression is just hilarious.
No, everybody loves it. Everybody tells me it sounds like you. And what's funny is I've never heard you say magical. I don't know where I got that from, but it's just a magical situation.
Alaska does me with a Wisconsin accent.
Okay, well, I can't do
But
that.
It's not wrong. I don't have a Wisconsin accent, but that interpretation of me, I think, is brilliant.
Well, everybody impersonates me and goes, ah, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't sound like that.
It's like how Michelle Visage becomes Joan Rivers when everyone...
Exactly, yeah.
I want to know, has there been a low moment? One moment that you're like, okay, either that you learned from or that you're like, never again.
Oh God. Many, many moments I think are a shit. There's career wise, I think there's peaks and valleys, you know, mm-hmm. with all of that. I don't live in a place of regret. And I also try my hardest at this age to just address it for what it is then and go, here it is, move on. You know, I can't live in that. And sometimes shit just fucking happens, you know, and you're just kind of trapped. So I don't think anything in particular sticks out. But I think if I didn't have those peaks and valleys, I wouldn't appreciate the peaks.
Yeah.
You know, it's
all peaks.
Yeah, you're kind of screwed. So I don't live in that world. But I mean, shit happened. Like, I try not to get upset, you know, when if something's running late or we miss a flight or a show gets canceled because of something or the sound goes out. What the fuck are you going to do? Now, there's a moment of like, but then after that, you're like, well, here it is. You know, this is what I got to do.
And I think some of that comes from those dive bar days.
Oh, God, yes. Nothing worked.
Any circumstance.
Nothing worked.
Doing everything a cappella. Doing everything like...
No lights.
Standing outside the club on a trash can, getting people to come in just to...
Blowing people. Blowing people under the trash can, trying to get them to come in. Trying to get them to come in your mouth. I mean, those were the moments. So I try not to let it shake me. You know, and I think we've talked about this with many queens from Drag Race. You know, we usually do a meet and greet situation, which we all dread a meet and greet because you're thinking, oh God, you're in these people's faces and you've had a shit day.
They're going to smell me.
And you've got to be on and you've got to be aware of what's happening. And I have to confess is that 2 minutes into it, I really do forget my shit and my troubles because still in the end, this 200 people want to take a picture with me and want to talk to me. You can't help but be fucking happy, you know? So in those moments, I kind of wake up and go, girl, it could be much worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, the worst day at work.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, what would we be doing besides? You know, we'd find other things to do, but like, we'd be missing out on maybe what we were born to do.
Without a doubt.
Who's your celebrity crush?
Oh, God. Like, let me think. Who do I love? I mean, as like, I want to have sex with?
No, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Oh, I like that Superman guy. And I don't normally like Henry, whatever his
Henry
name
Cavill.
Is. I can appreciate his beauty. Who's my crush? Well, I love Alan Cumming. He's just so adorable and lovely. He's got a husband, though. but yeah, I don't know who... I don't know. Who's yours? I'm curious.
Oh, I change it every episode.
Like, who gets you going? I can't think of...
Oh, I mean, my go-tos are Andy Samberg.
Oh, he's cute.
Eric Andre. For this episode, I will say Davide Diggs.
Oh, okay.
I am so into him.
Okay. Wait, do you need a minute? Because take a second. I think Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm attracted to talent, but I do appreciate beauty.
Yeah.
So I can sit back and go, well, he's a beautiful motherfucker. But...
I am a slut. I have a wide array of interests sexually.
Oh, okay. Was this question a lead in so you could tell me all of those?
No. I'm thinking that there's lots of ways, there's lots of things to find beautiful about lots of different people. I mean, my husband
yes.
is to me a very, very attractive
He's
person.
Adorable.
But I love our relationship because never have I had to pretend like there's not a lot of
other fish in the sea.
Other hot people out
yeah.
there. We love talking about who we find hot together. So.
Yeah. Oh, I do know who I saw recently. A friend of mine made me watch that show on Netflix, that period show. Is it Bridgerton. The guy on there, oh, honey, like he could eat crackers in my bed. You know, it's one of those. We have this saying, we used to say, the only reason why I'd kick him out of bed is to fuck him on the floor. And I would say, yes, I would take him. He's beautiful. Yeah. So yeah, that's probably the latest.
That's very good to know about you. You know, you are one person. You're a big part of my life, and I have no idea who you're attracted to.
Oh, isn't that good, though? That's good. Well, because they're all dead at this point. Like somebody, I was doing a Facebook, Instagram Live the other day, and I was saying, and someone chimed in, you slept with my ex-boyfriend, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, none of them have ever survived. This is completely made up. I don't know who you're talking about. So I made him, I said, you better text me who this is. And he texts them. Some gay person I don't even remember, but some gay person. I mean, imagine the person I slept with was gay. Usually they don't live to tell.
That's a loaded statement. So many ways to interpret that.
Load.
Thank you so much for being my guest, Bianca.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a delight to cackle with you. I'll end with one of my favorite stories is because you and I, you know, I'm almost 2 years sober. You and I used to drink together.
Yes.
And my favorite part of the night is when Bianca would get set on a loop where it was like, Jinx, listen to this Betty Davis impression. What horrible things have I done to you? And then it's 5 minutes later. Jinx, listen to this. What? And it just, every time I would think it was going to be something new. No, we're still doing
what I like
it. Same quote.
You were a very good actress because you acted it. So it was the first time you heard it.
I'm not going to put you on the spot.
Well, now we'll have to do sober nights. You know, well, actually, now that we've moved on to heroin, it's just been so much easier.
Oh, you're terrible, Muriel. Thanks so much for listening to Hi Jinx here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday. So make sure to search for Hi Jinx on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at The Jinx on Instagram or Jinx Monsoon everywhere else. And that's spelled J-I-N-K-X. I paid extra for the K, so you have to use it. Ask Bianca. K is very expensive these days. I'll see you next Wednesday for some more Hi Jinx.
Forever.
To listen to Hi Jinx ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Make sure to follow at Forever Dog Team and at Mom Podcasts on social and rate and review Hi Jinx 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi Jinx is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, produced by Big Dipper, editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.